what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie the Radio Chick Ubellus, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Well, welcome back to another adventure here on Blog Talk Radio. Looks like I'm going to be here on my own for just a little bit while my co-host Curtis is looking for someone. I'm your hostess with the least mostest, the Radio Chickadee, Annie. And you're here listening to Southern Sense live on half a dozen places. I don't even know where the heck we are at. Just go to the name of the show, Southern Sense, put it SouthernSense.net, or you can put Southern-Sense.com. Either way, it brings you to our website. We've got a lot to talk about today, a lot to do, and we've got some great guests. We have Scott Walter, who is the author of the new best-selling book out there, Arabella, The Dark Money Network of the Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America, which you can find at EncounterBooks.com. He's also the president of Capital Research Center that digs up a lot of dirt on these leftist organizations. And man, what he breaks wide open in this book, Arabella, I'm telling you, with this upcoming election campaign, it's opening up a can of worms. And I'm sure that George Soros and his minions are sitting in the back pulling their hair out, trying to figure out how to bring this guy down. But this book is phenomenal. It really opens up and shows you a lot of the things that are going on behind the scenes. We may have a glitch with our second guest, a little bit of a horse communication, but we're expecting Adrian Roman. He's the writer and director at Shadow Morse Entertainment. And he's got a new movie that just came out this past month called The Third Party. And as we see here in this upcoming election, we've got a third party candidate in Robert Kennedy Jr. Speaking of which, I'm trying to see if I can find, I have something here on my desk, and tell me I just put it somewhere else. Robert Kennedy Jr., in an interview, and I just had the interview here because I want to write back to that individual, calling or comparing those of us in the Tea Party conservative movement as the new rising of the Confederacy. And oh my God, that got my blood boiling. And I put the article somewhere and I will find it later. But he called those of us that want to adhere to the Constitution, that want to lower taxation, to make government more transparent and smaller and off our backs, akin to the Confederacy and the KKK. It seems he's gotten himself into a little bit of trouble here. Oh, here it is. I found it. I put it behind my clipboard. All right. And those that are watching on the live video, the little kitty that just jumped up behind me, her name is Puppy. Yes. I got a cat named Puppy. According to the Washington Free Beacon, he said the Tea Party movement is the resurgence of the Confederacy. He said big government is a threat, but that's not what the Tea Party cares about. They just don't want to pay their taxes. Okay. I don't know about that, because normally if you find someone that is conservative, they adhere to the rule of law, which includes paying your taxes. That's the last thing. What we do want to see is for the ridiculous taxes and regulations go out the window. We want lower taxes. As a matter of fact, this is from a Newsmax article, and they're talking about Biden's, whether or not you're better off financially underneath Biden or Trump. And in this article, they state that under Trump, he cut the federal income tax rate from 35% to 21%, pumping up corporate profits, also helping back the stock prices. Instead, we're seeing this administration wanting to tax, get this, unrealized gains. So in other words, if you're a homeowner like myself, and you have a piece of property, a house that you're living in, or a rental property, or just something you're holding for a vacation. It will increase in value, but you don't realize that value until you sell that house. That's not money in your pocket. So they want to tax you for money that's not even in your pocket yet. You have not earned it. Hence, it's called unrealized gains. So if we're against you taxing us for money that we haven't even made yet, how could that be a bad thing? It's not that we don't want to pay our taxes. We want to pay a reasonable tax. We want to know that those tax dollars go for the things that you claim that they're allotted for. I don't want to see a bridge to nowhere. If I'm giving my money for transportation funds, I want to see actual work. I want to see roads being repaired. I want to see bridges being built, but if for a reasonable reason, not one to nowhere, and one that is just benefiting your cronies. And I've got a perfect case right here in my own county I'm living in. And I went after the county council chair and asked him to explain himself for a project they claim to have been in completion. It's not. They can't obtain the land they need to finish the project because they want the landowner to donate to the county the land for free. That's his property. He lives on it. He shares it with his friends and neighbors. It's not the county's property. And they're going to try to use eminent domain to steal his property. We're against that. But he pays taxes on those properties. And he's not fighting. He's not complaining about the amount of taxes he's paying. He says, if you want my property, give me a fair market price. And I'll sell it to you. But no. Government wants what it wants. And to heck with the small guy. So yes, big government is a problem and a threat. And yes, we care about it. When there's government overreach like that, when they tell you what type of a light bulb you can put in your lamps, what type of a toilet you can buy, and whether or not you can now have a gas range, where are they going to go next? After your barbecue grills? Oh, wait a minute. Aren't they already doing that? Or the tools you use to clean up your yard. Oh, it's making too much noise to the neighbor next door. I agree. Don't start doing your yard, before 10 in the morning. There are some people that sleep late. Come on, be reasonable and be neighborly. But this is not what Bobby Kennedy is talking about. He said the Tea Party came out of nostalgia for a plantation economy, according to the report. If anything, the Tea Party arose after taxes were placed unjustifiably on tea, a major staple in the colonies. And the Tea Party came out of a northern state, an abolitionist state. Well, actually, it wasn't a state at the time, because the United States hasn't reformed, but it was the first volley on our revolution to challenge government back off. We're taxed enough already. And he further goes on to say, why is that? They all came out of those dozen southern states that were part of the Confederacy. This is the resurgence of the Confederacy. And he just slapped in the face every single person that lives north of the Mason-Dixon line that was a Tea Party activist, such as myself. I'm sorry, born and raised in New York. I came to the South as soon as I could, but that didn't change my conservative values moving from state to state. It doesn't mean I embrace the values of the Confederacy. It means the exact opposite. It means the exact opposite. And he even got into trouble with abortion, saying he believes in abortion even if it's full term. This is a healthy child being born that can live and breathe on its own. Yes, it needs food and substance. Yes, it needs care, but it independently breathes. Its heart is independent. It has already been born, and he believes in killing that child. Once it's born, that's a living human being. And you kill that child, that is murder. And he supports that. And even his running mate disagrees with him on that issue. You know, for those that are the Never Trumpers, those that are a third party, that are this America First movement that we see coming around, it's not the American First movement of the Trump administration. It's not the Trump campaign American First movement. It is a campaign, from what I'm seeing here in my own neighborhood, to rip apart the Republican Party and split us, therefore handing the presidency to Joe Biden or whoever his surrogate is, because he's got these debates scheduled coming up the end of June. I don't think he's going to make them. I think they're going to find some reason to pull it and say, wait a minute, we're going to have to put a new candidate in Joe Biden's place. This is just simply my prediction. Not talk of some crazy person. I'm hearing a lot of this. I'm hearing a lot of pundits on both sides of the aisle questioning whether or not Joe Biden will actually show up for the debates. And if he does, would that be also an excuse to pull him, his campaign, and place someone else in his stead to run the national campaign against Donald Trump? So yes, I have a bone to pick with Robert Kennedy Jr. in comparing us to the resurgence of the Confederacy. It's the most ludicrous thing that I have ever, ever, ever seen. Right now, Kennedy is getting 10.8% of the five-way polling average, according to Real Clear Politics. And if anything, this may be the one thing that may sink his campaign even further, because this is not going to go unanswered from me. I had a conversation recently with a friend of mine, and she has conservative values. And as we were talking, because I'm outspoken, because you know me, I never shut up. But we were talking about that very issue of abortion. And I said, listen, abortion should be a state's rights. It's not one of the enumerated powers listed in the Constitution. That is a right accorded to each and every individual state based upon the moral values of those voters within that state. Now, I personally do not believe in abortion. I do understand there will be instances where it becomes necessary for the health of the mother, or if the child will be born dead. There are children born stillborn. There are certain instances where it's the health issue specifically, not economic issue, but not monetary, not it's some other baby daddy that, you know, I don't want his kid, but I want that guy's kid, not that guy, but this guy. You know, you hear about these welfare moms that have four or five baby daddies. There was an instance right here in Georgia where she had eight different baby daddies just so she can collect welfare. That's not an excuse for abortion. That's an excuse for being a responsible parent. But to say that up until the child is born, it's okay to kill that child, to abort that child, this is the belief that Robert Kennedy has. And then he has the audacity to say that we are the rising Confederacy, a Confederacy that came out of the Democratic Party, a Confederacy that gave birth to the KKK, a Confederacy that we fought from the northern states as abolitionists. And he says those of us that are in the Tea Party are all Southerners? No. This was a nationwide movement that the government killed with the IRS manhunt on us. And some of us are still standing. And Robert Kennedy, you're going to be hearing from me. That's for damn sure. For this stupidity to say that the Tea Party is the resurgence of the Confederacy. And Curtis, you got no sound from you again, Curtis. Make sure your headset's in the right port. Here we go. Folks, this is live. You never know what's going to happen here. And we got comments coming up in here. Hello.
Check one. Hey.
We got you.
It seems like he doesn't know his party's history, and he's part of that group that wants to kind of like change history.
Rewrite history. I'm sorry. Yeah. We're too dumb to know the rise of the Tea Party in the Revolutionary War. It gave rise to the Revolutionary War. It gave rise to the the bullet that killed Crispus Attucks. It was the shot heard around the world. That was the term I was thinking of. A black man in Boston was murdered by British troops because he was fighting for freedom. That's the Tea Party. It doesn't matter what your race, color, or gender is. It is a movement of believing we come back to our constitutional values, to what our founding fathers believed in, which was limited government. You can tell I'm getting pissed.
He doesn't know that that was the party of segregation and Jim Crow and kind of like black laws, you know, to keep, you know, blacks from voting. apparently he doesn't remember that his uncle had to send National Guards down to the South, you know, the Democratic-controlled South, to allow black students to go to school and enter college there, you know, to be integrated. So I find it hard to believe he doesn't know this, but, you know, they throw out anything on the left because they know that people just suck it up without, you know, checking it, you know, fact-checking it.
And they're calling people that support Trump or vote for Trump as low-information voters. But Robert F. Kennedy right here is pandering to a low-information voter. Someone who will go on TikTok or X, and if it's not 140 characters or less, it's not something they're going to pay attention to. But then there's individuals like you and I that are conservative, that I'm a Tea Party activist. I do my homework. I look at the issue from both sides before I make up my mind. And I'm starting to tell the story of a friend of mine having a conversation with her. And, you know, she doesn't talk politics at all, really. But I know her to be a conservative individual. And as we were talking, she goes, well, what's your stance on abortion? And I said, abortion, to me, is a personal issue. It's not something the federal government should be having any say in. It's a state's issue. And to me, it's an issue between an individual and God. I understand there are necessities for medical necessity for women and babies who are in distress. I can understand that. But if you're going to take a perfectly healthy fetus and simply because you didn't feel like being a mom, or your boyfriend or husband walked out and you didn't feel like raising the child, or it's going to cost you too much, or you didn't like that baby's daddy that got you pregnant, or any of these non-medical emergency reasons, I got a problem with that.
To me, that's murder.
Yeah. And when Robert F. Kennedy says he believes that you can still kill that child after it's born, that's homicide. That is intentional murder.
Infanticide, yeah.
That child did nothing wrong. It has no way to defend itself. And yet you're giving it a death sentence simply because it's inconvenient to you.
It has no say in the process, you know. It's just there.
No say.
I think we are the ones who have to be their voices to defend them, you know. Yes. And like you said, there are exceptions to the rule. And even if the mother was raped, I still don't think that's a reason to abort the child. Put the child up for adoption. There are plenty of people out there who would love to raise a kid that can't have one of their own.
Well, they also say that it's for the mental welfare of the mother. Again, that is an individual situation, depending upon the woman and her mental state. There are agencies out there, there are facilities for women that are in crisis. And that is a crisis. We have interviewed two women here on this show that were daughters of a rape. They were born because the mother was raped. They are healthy, intelligent women who have families of their own now. How many lives would have been lost had that mother decided to not take that child to full term? But the mother had the compassion knowing that the baby is not the cause of the crime. The baby is just as much of a victim as the crime, as she is.
Oh, yeah.
They're equal victims. And over time, one individual I'm talking about specifically, she reunited with her birth mother. And they were glad. And both of them were in pain. And they needed it when they found each other. It helped them heal. So there is hope. But then again, it is an individual case-by-case basis. There will be some women that are so mentally fragile, they can't handle it. And there would be no choice but to. But then again, if there's a way to help them heal and to bring that innocent child to a full term, that child deserves a chance at life.
But you know, I think there's another angle to this and why they want these kids to go as close to full term as possible. You know about the black market for organs.
Yes. Yes.
They want to harvest these.
And Planned Parenthood has been caught doing exactly that, selling the organs, selling the body parts.
There you go.
Planned Parenthood is getting money from the federal government to provide abortions, which we're trying to prevent. They're getting donations from people. They're raking money left and right. Plus, they're getting their fees for performing these procedures. And then they go further on and then sell them for organ donation, body parts, lab experiments, Lord knows whatever else.
Name it.
Breaking in money hand over foot. You want to know what the story is behind Planned Parenthood? Follow the Benjamins. And then you'll find out what the truth is behind there. It's not for the health of the mother. It's not for the health of the child. It's for the dollars.
For the profit, yeah.
Well, now that I got myself riled up, and we only have a few minutes before our guest calls in, those that watch our show know that we start off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. Well, today is going to be completely different. Today's show is being dedicated to the National Police Week, which is this week. Excuse me. Is dedicated to all the brave men and women that have fallen in the line of duty over the past year. And this is some of the statistics taken down from the Officer Down Memorial page, which you can find at omdp.org. In 2023, the total of line of duty deaths totaled 138. The number one cause of deaths was 48 caused by gunfire. The second was 23 deaths caused by automobile crashes. The number three cause of death in 2023, 22 years after the incident, is 9/11 related illnesses. 22 years later, men and women are dying in the line of duty because of 9/11. The number four cause of death in 2023 was vehicle assault. Of those deaths, the highest number of law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty, and this includes not just police officers, includes deputy sheriffs, correctional officers, probation officers, border patrol, and numerous other law enforcement agencies within our state, federal, and local governments. The number one month of cause of deaths was December. 16 members were killed in the line of duty in December alone. 15 were killed in August alone of 2023. The number one state with the highest law enforcement killed and died in the line of duty was New York. New York State lost 14 members of the service. The number two is easy to understand because it is a border state. The number two state with 11 deceased in 2023 in the line of duty was Texas. And the law enforcement did not die because they were men. They would die because they were law enforcement officers. 10 that died in the line of duty were women. 128 were men. The average age of law enforcement officers that died in the line of duty in 2023 was 45 years old. The average tour of duty, there were law enforcement officers for, on average, 15 years. But it's not just the men and women that serve that fine line of blue. It is also their canine partners. 29 canine officers died in the line of duty. The number one cause, 9 canines passed by gunfire. The number two, 3 canines died in the line of duty from assault. And I can go through all the names, all 138 names, but it takes up 29 pages. And in this year alone, and this is only May, 58 members of the service died in the line of duty in 2024. 21 died from gunfire. 13 died from an automobile crash. 7 were deliberately struck by a vehicle. 4 died from heart attacks. And still, in 2024, 23 years later, 2 members died from 9/11 illnesses. And once again, New York State leads in line of duty deaths with 5 members of the service dying in the line of duty. Today's show is dedicated to these brave men and women and canine officers that served and protected and lost their lives in 2023 and 2024. Please take a moment for prayer as you remember them on this week, National Law Enforcement Week. May God bless each and every one. So we dedicate this show to those members of the services that died. We also dedicate this show to all other first responders, be they firefighters or emergency services, alongside with law enforcement. Also to our military, from the birth of this nation through today and into our hopeful future. And we dedicate this song by Tiffany, Soul of a Nation. May God bless each and every one.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free, we led with grace. Let it be seen, from sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other. For the next generation, let us be known as people of honor, humble and bold, faithful through fire. Let us hold firm to our conviction with wide open hearts, eager to listen. Oh, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other. Oh, for the soul of the nation, for oh, the next generation.
Oh, for the soul.
brother, sister, brother. Oh, we gotta learn to love each other. Oh, for the soul of the nation, for the next generation.
All right, and we are back. You're listening to Southern Sense live everywhere. Just go to the name of the show, southernsense.net, and check us out. I'm your hostess with the least of mostest, Annie, the radio chickadee, Yubelis, along with my co-host, the one and the only, the genius, Curtis C.S. Bennett. And that was the dedication in honor of my brethren in blue as National Law Enforcement Week is this week. And I'm sorry, I got a little choked up. I've stood too many formations for my brethren in blue. This week means a lot to me. That said, we have a gentleman waiting patiently in studio to bring on board. His name is Scott Walter, and he is the author of Arabella, the Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America, found on Encounter Books. Good afternoon, Scott. How are you today?
Great to be with you, Anne.
Oh, it is our pleasure. Yeah, welcome to the show. Welcome to the loony bin. Listen, I got to tell you, I got so frustrated and angry last night. I was reading your book up in Kindle, and the way I do it with authors is I'll highlight the section, and then I'll print out the highlighted notes. Makes it really easy. Well, I've got a brother printer that's going to go through the window. So finally, around 9 o'clock last night, the notes printed out, and I've got like about 29 pages of notes printed out. But I got to tell you, this book is scary. I knew dark money, and I knew Soros was behind a lot of this stuff. And I also often question just how far the tentacles of the spider went. But it's not just George Soros. He's like a kid in the candy shop compared to what Arabella actually is. And to follow this, now, you're president of Capital Research Center, so you had the research ability to find all of this out. But for a peon like me, this actually blew my mind. I mean, I know that government manipulates us. No, not in the least bit. But the amount of manipulation we find from Arabella and its offshoots in partnership with the federal government and big tech is staggering. And we wonder why everyone's saying the election's not stolen.
You cracked one of the crucial codes there, which is, yes, Soros is as bad as you think, but the left has a lot of Soroses.
I said it's going to be a Soros subject, pun intended. But let me pull out these sheets now. Like I said, I God bless Stephen over at Manfredi, because he's been sending me great people like you for. And I've been doing this now going on 14, going almost 15 years. Oh, God bless him. He always said there'd be great people like you. This Arabella started back in 2005. So correct me if I get anything wrong, because I've got like little scribbles all over the place. It was just one individual, a Brian Fallon, who was a Silver Spoon kid. And why is it that these people that have money seem to always swing to the left, when you would think that if you're born in a capitalist society and you're making your living off of capitalism, you'd swing more to the right? But that blows my mind on another subject. Eric Kessler came up with this stupid idea about trails in Montana where you had off-roaders go. Now, if anyone knows anything, off-roaders love the environment, and the last thing they want to see is it being harmed, so they stick to certain trails. And anyone that goes off trail, they get called out. The trails are built specifically so you can enjoy the outdoors without harming the environment. And he comes up with this idea that he's going to be a champion for the environment. Was this just like a feeler to see what he could do, or was this just something like he stumbled on and went with the big aha, I got something here?
Well, it seems, you know, it was early on when he was, you know, the operation was not the multi-billion dollar giant it is today. It was just starting out. And it seems like that was one of the very first, if not the first thing they ever did, sort of, you know, to prove this would work. But the thing, you know, that strikes me on this is here you have East Coasters who probably never set foot in Montana, certainly never been off road in Montana, and they want to go harass and ruin the lives of these perfectly innocent Americans enjoying the beautiful Montana outdoors. Now, the thing is, guys in Montana on their ATVs or motorcycles, they don't find a way to go harass people at a New Yorker cocktail party on the Upper East Side, right? Doesn't occur to them to try to mess with those people's lives. Why is it that it does occur to people on the East Coast to harass Americans and fly over country?
Yeah, it just made absolutely no sense. And on top of that, they choose these innocuous terms for their groups. So they sound innocent. I mean, how bad does it sound if you have like Leeward Wind Foundation or, I don't know, Wind Chimes? I don't know. But they come up
with Wisconsin.
Oh,
for a fair shake, secure Michigan elections.
They sound so innocent, and people are donating their money to it, but they don't read all the way down to the fine print, and that's when you get that catcher moment. But even that fine print can hide what the truth is. It won't say Arabella necessarily. It might say Windward Funds or one of the open land trusts or something like that. Unless you know that they are one of the four founding figures of Arabella, you wouldn't know.
No, that's right. They're designed to look like it's your neighbors who are upset about something, when in fact it's just some goof at a desk in a DC office who's been handed a new accounting code and is setting up a new website and maybe buying some Facebook ads.
And we're falling for this. That's the whole thing that really gets me. Because when you're going through your book, it's deliberate in the end. This is deliberate. They're using our own naivety against us. And a perfect thing was Brett Kavanaugh, his confirmation hearings. And it was Demand Justice. Was that Demand Justice?
That's right.
Demand Justice first made its appearance. Well, what doesn't sound healthy about Demand Justice?
Yep.
Teeth went in backwards today. So here they are, they're protesting a bit against Brett Kavanaugh. But again, I think it was the toe in the water point. Let's see how far we can get with this and how naive people are. But the second you see someone come up with pre-printed signs to a spontaneous protest, and the little bells go off in my head, bells and whistles.
Yeah, and remember, in that case, they didn't just have the pre-printed "Stop Kavanaugh." They also had "Stop Barrett" and, you know, multiple other names. So they had all the people he might have named, right? So yeah, and I dare say the people holding the signs and banging them up and down probably hadn't been reading a lot of legal opinions by any of those people.
Now, but we also see that basically in these Hamas supporting rallies. You know, all the pre-printed signs, everyone's wearing the same color prayer shawl and the same face mask, same tents. These are organized. And they did this deliberately against Donald Trump and his rallies, too. They would send them in to try to cause a disruption, pretending that they are MAGA supporters.
Yes, you know, the most famous thing there was James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, of course, got Scott Fogel to say, oh yeah, you know, we hired mentally unstable people and shoved them into the Trump rallies in hopes that there'd be something that would make them look bad.
Absolutely. And ladies out there watching and listening, James O'Keefe in person is better looking than on camera. I had the opportunity to interview him one-on-one at a South Carolina Tea Party Coalition convention back in 2015. Anyway, some years ago.
Hey, Scott, you heard of the saying that we are swimming in an ocean of knowledge, but so many of us are swimming in the sea of ignorance. I tend to blame that on our educational system, the media, even some of the leadership in the communities and whatnot. But how do we get around this? You know, I mean, with all this technology, it seems like people have forgotten or never learned how to do research. I mean, how long have we had Space Force now? Because I just ran into a friend of mine and the mayor of this town who never even heard of Space Force.
Well,
I'm scratching my head, you know?
Yep. Well, you are right that it is the hardest thing of all is to get other folks to listen and to learn about things. But it is also a struggle to do the research. This book is the fruit of years of research by my whole team. As I'm very clear from the very beginning, you know, this is not my book. This is the team's book. I just get to take credit for it. But it's the educational system is, you know, as everyone, you know, what proportion of Americans would say our schools are not doing a good job, right? 80%, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's true. They don't teach them how to think, nor do they teach them anything to think about, right? So they're ignorant of anything except the one single fact. America's a racist country. That is the only thing
they've ever been
taught to somebody from pre-K to postdoctoral. That's it. And they don't know any other thing. I mean, like you were saying about the protests, from the river to the sea. Like, if you ask what percentage of them could name the river or even the sea, right? That's just utter ignorance, but fanaticism, nihilism, hatred, you know, death to America, death to Israel, rah, rah.
Well, you know, a little to the rough side. I did hear at one point people that are angry and dissatisfied. There's some sort of I'm trying to think. You know, I'm having a bit of a brain fart today. Some sort of like a hormone gets exploded in your system. It's like an athlete when you get that rush. You also get that same rush if you're angry. So you can be perpetually angry because you still get that adrenaline rush. That's the word I was trying to think of. I can't. Why would I not remember that? You know, I had enough of them as a cop. But you would get that adrenaline rush. And then if you can make someone feel inferior to you, it makes you feel even better and higher. So it is like a drug in their bloodstream. And maybe that's why those of us that are conservative, we're so nice and calm and even and happy. But they've taken this to a fine science. And we're talking about transparency, but there's absolutely no transparency in this because you never know who the donors are or actually where the actual money goes to. They have so many spinoffs. And yet I found ironically that one of their programs is to do campaign finance reform, but the very finance reform they're campaigning for would be the thing that just shut them down at the same time. So it's kind of like an oxymoron. Yes, I did read the book.
Yes. Well, the one of the things about to know about campaign finance reform is that it's virtually always a complete fraud the way it actually works out. So the last big law like that was McCain-Feingold all the way back in around 2002. Mm-hmm. But guess what? 8 billionaires provided almost all the money to lobby for and pass that bill. And those 8 billionaires had the same last name. You want to guess?
Soros?
Not Soros. Last name was Foundation, right?
Oh, Soros, I got the joke.
Blah, blah. But they're billionaires. Don't ever forget that. They are billionaires. Yeah. And they paid for dozens and dozens of grantees of theirs to go and demand, we've got to have campaign finance reform. Now, the biggest donor of them all was Pew Charitable Trusts. And, you know, Pew does polling, too. They have a division that does polling. Just a couple of weeks before McCain-Feingold was signed, the Pew polling outfit asked Americans, here's a list of 22 issues. Rank them in the order of importance. Would you care to guess what was 22nd out of 22?
Campaign finance reform.
21 was global warming, Pew's other great thing they were financing. So if you want examples, you know, they love to talk about democracy, and yet they thwart overwhelming majorities of Americans on things like that, or voter ID laws, or shoving men into women's sports, right? All these things, 80% of America doesn't want this because you'd be nuts to, but they do.
You know, it's a spider web. But can you explain how Arabella actually gets away with this? Because if you're supposed to be a nonprofit, you're going to be a 501c3 or a 501c4. And yet they've taken this to such a high science that there's basically no IRS reporting. There's no transparency in donations. There's no transparency actually in the actual work that they really truly do. But what we do see is the aftermath of it, such as in these Hamas protests.
Well, here's the basic Arabella scheme that is ingenious, to be fair to them. So Arabella Advisors is a for-profit consulting PR firm, and it created and operates about a half dozen different nonprofits. You're right, both the C4s, the C3s types and all. And the checks get written into those, right? So Soros or Gates or whatever, they're going to write checks to the nonprofits. And then those half dozen nonprofits create hundreds and hundreds of the fake groups we were laughing at, like Opportunity Wisconsin and Keep Iowa Healthy and all. Now, the thing is, though the half dozen nonprofits do have to file the IRS disclosure forms, like, you know, like my think tank does, and you know, any other charity or political.
Those are the 990s, right?
Yeah, but exactly the IRS form 990. But one of those half dozen entities is aggregating hundreds of the actual groups, like Demand Justice, you mentioned, that fights on court nominations. So Demand Justice, when it was created by Arabella, didn't have to file its own 990. It was just one of dozens and dozens of projects of the 1630 fund operated by Arabella. So you can't go and look and see, well, do they have board members and who are they? How much did they spend on fundraising? Did they pay for first class travel? What was their budget in the first place? You know, all of those things disappear when you agglomerate so many projects under a single nonprofit.
Well, you write in your book, under this secretive arrangement, Demand Justice is not required to file the annual 990 tax reforms with the IRS, which gives Demand Justice advantages over its opponents. Although tax-exempt nonprofits are required to disclose spending on lobbying and grassroots, 1630 Fund merely discloses the lobbying spending totals for all of the sponsored initiatives collectively. Exactly. Man, that's crazy. That is, and they went after the RT Party groups back when we were formed in 2010, Lois Lerner. And it's exactly the reason why I told my group we stay a loose association of friends. We do not incorporate. And we get things done, but we're not raising funds. We're not going out there invading someone's office and saying, you must. We're not out there protesting for the destruction of another nation. You know, we are law-abiding individuals, but this is not what Arabella has given birth to.
No, although here's the funny, the epilogue to that Demand Justice story is, after we had been attacking them as this inside this gigantic dark money entity, because the people in Congress who scream the loudest about dark money are the people who hate justices being on the Supreme Court, like Clarence Thomas, and actually respecting the Constitution and the laws. So it was embarrassing for them to have their biggest ally, Demand Justice, be part of the biggest dark money network in America when they themselves have been screaming about dark money, dark money. So Arabella finally got spun out after several years into an independent nonprofit. So it does now file its own 990, but it will shock you to learn that a lot of that money still comes from Arabella. So independent with quotation marks.
Well, now there's a reason for these names, Arabella, 1630 Fund, was it the Woodward Foundation? There's a reason for these names. What is the history behind that? And it's kind of like diabolical.
You're quite right. So I believe you mentioned already, this gets off the ground in 2005. And in the aughts, there was a huge push by the lefties, especially in the environmentalist movement. And our trust fund baby who started Arabella, of course, got his money from fossil fuel related company. Daddy's company was auto parts, right? But anyway, but he's an enviro. So I'm convinced that the reason he chose these names was because the environmentalists were trying to seduce evangelicals in America to become environmentalists. They would call it creation care and whatnot. Right now, Arabella was the name of a famous ship that early Puritan fathers for America. They got in the ship Arabella and they go to America. Another of the ships was Hopewell, which is the name of another Arabella fund. The ships left in the year 1630, and 1630 fund is the one that birthed Demand Justice. So maybe the founder is a serious Calvinist Christian, or maybe he just was hoping to flim flam some nice Calvinist Christians with this kind of Wizard of Oz type.
Actually, I played Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz. Don't look behind the curtain. Anyway, you mentioned the Pastor's Toolkit, and that was care of the Venture Fund that wanted the pastors to integrate creation care with teaching into their ministry. But it was a huge environmental push, the Green New Plan, or whatever you want to call it. Fossil fuels are bad, solar energy and wind are good, despite the fact that those solar panels are poisonous and you cannot put them in an ordinary dump. You have to handle them as hazardous materials. And the wind farms cause vibrations that are causing whales to beach. And if you plant them near a town, people start to have mental issues because of the vibration. No, that's okay for the environment, but fossil fuels are bad. I'm sorry.
Remember, the supreme thing that's bad is you. Mm-hmm. They hate human beings. And I'll give you a quick story about this. So the crazies on campus today, right? People who are leaders among the crazy left always get radicalized in high school or college, right? And Eric Kessler, the founder of Arabella, he got radicalized by this wacko environmentalist fellow. Now, he was a very prominent environmentalist. He'd been head of the Sierra Club. Founded the League of Conservation Voters, Friends of the Earth, and other big enviro groups. But he gave a talk at Kessler's college when Kessler was an undergrad, and Kessler was so enraptured with this come to Gaia moment that he hitchhiked all the way from Colorado to San Francisco to work for the guy and ended up at things like League of Conservation Voters and all. Now, listen to what this guy's 1977 manifesto for Friends of the Earth included, this little tidbit. Because here's the thing, you may remember, Anne, now we have global warming as the environmental apocalypse. But back in the 70s,
global cooling,
population control, right? Population bomb. We're all by now, we're all going to be dead from starvation and famine. Well, this is what the guru that radicalized Kessler had in his manifesto in 1977. The first chapter of the manifesto is on population, and it considers these possibilities. Maybe it will have to be a crime to bear a child unless the government gives you a license. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not radical enough. Maybe we'll have to force contraceptives into every parental aged human. And then if you get your license, you can get an antidote to the contraceptive so you could have a child. If the government says it's okay.
A movie back in the 1970s. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was called Logan's Run. Battle Force's first movie, Logan's Run.
I don't remember it well, but I remember the title in Farrah Fawcett. Yes.
Yeah, okay. How can you forget? And I owned a pair of...
Like democracy to you?
No.
Like, I don't know, authoritarianism, a little bit, maybe, kind
of. But so, I did own a pair of Earth shoes then. I did. Oh, they hurt.
Isn't it true that the left, they're masters at getting people to follow them, and that's because they reach out to people on an emotional level, where Republicans and conservatives, we tend to be more cerebral. What are your thoughts on that?
again, you nailed it, just like with the schools. That is just so central, right? And I, by the way, I argue with, you know, I've been in the conservative, you know, think tank world since 1983, right? So this is something that I'm always saying. It is great that we have these statistics and data and all that. You know, I don't sneer at that. I compile it and create it myself. But that is only the beginning. You have got to turn that into stories, right? The left, the way the left hits those emotions is through the story. They always, they start with the victim, then they go to the villain, and that's you and me. And then they go to the hero, and that's them, who saves the day. Now, it's utter garbage most of the time as far as factualness of any of this stuff. But it is enormously powerful, and we have to tell the stories. You know, you mentioned Law Enforcement Week, right? When the ordinary American hears the story of this, you know, suffering of law enforcement and their families, they know who the villain is then. And it's Mr. Soros's prosecutors. And by the way, I hate to tell you, Zuckerberg is doing that now too. And in fact, he puts his money for that largely through Arabella. And now just today, there's a big new thing. Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos's billionaire ex-wife, she just announced a lot of money going to some of those, you know, I hate cops, let's help criminals and hurt cops kind of things, and prosecutors, of course. But so we have to tell those stories. And, you know, we have to have statistics too, but we got to tell the stories, because that's, you're totally right. That's what moves people.
Well, your book has all the case studies in the different funds, such as the North Fund, the Hub Project, the Co-Equal Project, and some of these sound so wonderful. They reek of leftism to me. And the book is fascinating. But we got ourselves a financial system now with Arabella. They've been able to milk the system and distort it to its advantage and our disadvantage. How do we stop this? Is there a way to stop this?
Well, the Christian.
No, I got you tongue-tied.
No, I don't mean to be hopeless at all, but I do want to say, you know, we got to be sober about this, right? I always sort of like the Christian job description of, you know, pick up your cross each day, right? You know, you don't get to not fight. And again, mm-hmm. like the law enforcement guys, right? Every time they put the uniform on, they got to be ready. They got to be willing to fight. And that's true for all the rest of us. But having said that, you know, we talked about Wizard of Oz a second ago. Arabella largely is a Wizard of Oz operation, right? When Dorothy first sees the wizard, big, scary, intimidating and all this. But when the curtain gets pulled back and you see it's just some guy at a microphone, well, the wizard's power evaporates, right? Mm-hmm. So what you're doing right now, educating people about this, that is so important, because that really does sap their power. That's why they want to silence you and cancel you, right? The left brain fears you're going to talk to somebody. Oh, my God, you might tell somebody something.
Yes, so yes.
There's a reason they're scared of that. It is powerful. And then there also were some laws that, you know, you can't fix everything with laws, but I would love to see laws for things like, you know, no foreign money can go into these political nonprofits or ballot initiatives, because one of Arabella's biggest donors is Hans-Jürg Wyss, yet another George Soros. This guy is a Swiss foreign national who shouldn't be meddling in our politics, you know, but has given $250 million to Arabella in the last decade and a half. So that's a good law. Another thing would be the left uses the charitable sector, the 501c3s, to do massive micro-targeted voter registration and turnout. And that should just be illegal. It should just be illegal. It's illegal now if you do it in a partisan way, but guess what, Ann? They swear they're not doing it in a partisan way. Really, they're not.
No, not at all.
Having it be fuzzy, it needs to be, nope, you just can't do it.
Nope.
You know, period.
Well, Scott, your book is absolutely excellent. And by the way, guys, if you sign up on Newsmax, you can get the book for free. But they can also find you at Capital Research Center. You're the president over there, and great research. I'm telling you, the book just scared the ever-loving out of me, because you didn't realize, and I'm sorry, I've been a conservative since the day I've been born. So I've been fighting an uphill battle all my life, coming out of New York. But it will open up a lot of eyes, and it's not just the Zuckbucks out there. It's a lot of other different interferences. I'm sorry, my teeth are just in backwards today. A lot of other interferences in our system, not just the political system, but our social economic system as well. Behind CRT, behind Planned Parenthood, they're behind a lot of other evil things. And I just had a rant about Planned Parenthood before. And people can find the book Arabella, The Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America. God bless you, Scott. And we welcome you back anytime you feel like it.
Well, thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Our pleasure.
Take care, Scott.
Scott Walter, check him out. Take care. Now, we've got our next victim up, a friend of yours, Curtis, Adrian Roman, who is a film producer and documentarian. He's got a new one out called The Third Party. And Adrian, you missed the start of the thing because I just went off on a huge rant on Robert Kennedy Jr., who akined the Tea Party movement to the resurgence of the Confederacy. You want to see my blood boil? Ooh, doggy.
Adrian. Ooh, doggy.
Well, welcome aboard. You have Shadow Moss Entertainment. Tell us about this, and when did you start it, and why did you start this?
The production, the film production company, or this?
Yes, yes.
I had a corporate career for over 35 years, and when I moved on, I wanted to get back to my roots, which was the arts. And writing primarily, and so I started writing screenplays. That went well, and so I turned the screenplays into films, and just went from there.
You're a one-man production company?
Largely. I have associates who step in on various projects. One particular, his name is Scott James, and he's executive produced on several of these projects, so... I'm carrying the ball on it, but I've got some help.
Now, I did watch your film, The Third Party. It's a 45-minute little short film that people can find up on YouTube, and there is a link on the show description that they can click on to find it. And I mean, I kind of like laughed about what's going on today in today's election world, and it is a dog-eat-dog backstabbing world and very duplicitous.
Right, yeah, for sure. That's what it's about. It's definitely trying to key in on, you know, what's happening behind the scenes that I think potentially many people aren't aware of. Certainly people who watch shows such as yours and other conservative podcasters and news shows are aware. But then there's the general public and many people in the middle who I know who kind of actually... frankly, stay away from a lot of politics because, it's oppressive and they just want to live their lives. So I think that one of the things that the arts can do, whether it's a stand-up comedian, a novelist, an author, or a filmmaker, is maybe they can cross over or reach some people who otherwise, let's say, would not turn on a newsman. Right. So I didn't want to be preaching to the choir.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that some of the, whether it's, you know, people who are very conservative or people who are very liberal, the large majority of their audience already believe in their ideology or what they're saying. And they tune in, you know, to be informed and to hear what's new, possibly, right? What's happening now with the Supreme Court or what's happening now with legislation or the presidential elections. And then there's people that, you know, want to be entertained. And it's like Dave Chappelle. I saw one of his comedy specials. And, you know, when he says something that might poke at a certain ideology, it's a huge bomb that goes off. And there's people that are, you would consider themselves liberals, maybe not leftists so much, who have adored him and loved him for decades. So when he sort of punches around at some of their beliefs, I think that he might actually reach people, and I think film can do that as well.
Well, you know, it's funny. When did you start writing the script here for the the third party?
Actually, I started writing it in 2019. We did pre-production in 2019. We started shooting it in 2020, early 2020, and then, of course, got shut down.
COVID.
Yeah. And it was harsh. And the story was really very different. It was about a recent young law school graduate, and she got thrust into national politics. And that young lady did an unbelievable job. She was, you know, she played the lead, but she left. And when COVID hit, she wasn't coming back. You know, I mean, she hibernated. So many people that saw the 23 minutes that we did shoot of that pilot kept urging me over the years. And, you know, man, it's not gotten much better since 2019. In fact, I think it's gotten worse in some ways in terms of the polarization. So I rewrote the script last year, and we shot it.
Now, just curious, because when you wrote this, did you by any chance have Donald Trump in mind? I'm looking at the last few scenes of that, where the Senator Ted Stewart comes out and publicly announces himself that he's running, and then the next clip is the sex scandal. And here we are dealing with this in the New York State Court.
Yeah, you know,
and just as I'm listening to the broadcast on the TV about what's going on with Trump and the trial, I'm also watching your thing, and I'm going, wait a minute here. Hello.
You know, what's really interesting, that's a good question, and no, not specifically, but I'm a big West Wing fan, and that was shot, that had seven seasons. Its first season was 1999, and if you watch that show, which I've seen all seven seasons probably four times, I'm talking about a huge fan. But I'm just, Aaron Sorkin's writing is wonderful. And, you know, they're talking about the same stuff in 1999 and in 2000. And they're talking about the border. They're talking about the Middle East. They're talking about, the deficit. They're not, this, the third party is pretty direct when it gets to blackmail, corruption, the backstabbing. And so I don't think anybody at the end of this is going to not know kind of, I guess, where my head's at with some of that or all of it. But it wasn't specifically written. You know, I wrote the third party, like I said, the first, we were shooting it in early 2020. And RFK Jr., is running as a third party candidate. I think there's actually a couple of others. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But just different pieces. Almost once a week or so since I put this out. The distributors have it now, so it'll end up on other streaming services. But right now, I just put it on YouTube so people such as yourself can see it. And but it's not really directed toward, like, you know, any one politician. It's really, for me, it's a commentary, an expose on national politics. And, you know, it's really sad how true, to life a lot of these things that happen in this film are. But about once a week, someone calls me and said, hey, I just heard that, you know, this happened or that happened, and it's in the film. So there's a lot that's in this film. The border stuff is pretty direct, and how, you know, both candidates feel about that. And then the media bias that I thought through the different interviews from the two candidates exposes the media bias, and certainly at the end.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as a talent, you're into films, I write novels, and there's nothing more I would like better than just to write my passion, which is adventure stories, human interest stories, and things like that. But it is important to me the direction this country is going in. So I have used my literary talent to address that. Right. And it's good to see that in your platform, you're pretty much doing the same thing. I know you probably would love to write and make movies about some other subject other than politics, but the nation at times called for us, you know, to use our talents to help save this republic.
You know, I
thank you for that.
You're right, and I frankly, I didn't want to jump in to the fray. I've had adversity and tragedy in my life, and I just wanted to produce art, and I paint in oils. My wife's a watercolor painter, and she's quite talented, and I write, and I love telling stories, and I have a film called Oak on the Outside that's done very well, and it's on a lot of different streaming services. It has a poignant message because the subplot is a child trafficking, anti-child trafficking message, but it's a romantic drama. And yes, you're right. I this welled up in me. I think I'm no different than a lot of people. I don't want to, to battle every day. I want to have a nice life. I'd like to go, go walk in a park and go to an art gallery and go hear the symphony or a concert or take my wife out to dinner. I don't want to be embroiled constantly in picking up a sword and battling against the evil forces that are attempting to bring this nation, and not just this nation, but seemingly the Western world, to its knees. And I did this, really to make some kind of a contribution in that regard. And that's why I didn't really pull any punches. I mean, once you're 3 minutes or 4 minutes into this thing, you're starting to, I'm launching missiles like every 3 minutes in this thing, right? There's a line Senator Stewart has asked about the border, and shouldn't we, open our arms to people who are from other oppressed nations? And he tells this story about how when he was a young man with a young family, many of the members of the church would go on mission trips, right? And the pastor asked him, why you don't volunteer? And his answer was, it's because I'm just scraping by. I mean, I have a wife, I have two babies, I have one on the way. My family is my first ministry. Until I can, get my own house in order, can't really. And that story is a real story for me in my early 20s. But then he makes the comment that this is, it's like feeding your neighbor's kids and watching your own children starve to death. There's a line of dialogue for you there. So that kind of thing crops up in this 45 minutes. Every 2 or 3 minutes, there's another one of those. I love art. And like many people, right now I'm writing a kind of an old 1940s thriller. I love the 1940s movies. I love Casablanca. I love the Maltese.
Bogart.
Yeah, I'm a bogey fan. Huge, huge bogey fan. All of the 40s movies, I love them. I've studied them.
Edward G. Robinson,
Largo, right? But then you get both of them. I love movies. I love all kinds of movies. And, A Few Good Men, Pretty Woman. Just all kinds of films, and Shawshank Redemption, My Cousin Vinny, and I do want to make those films. I want to make a comedy. I want to make a romantic film, but this one was made. I mean, I think my dad, Annie. I don't know if my dad. You want to talk?
No, she doesn't.
Okay, well, I mean,
Yeah, I know him. Very passionate.
Yeah. Do you know anybody more conservative than my dad? I mean, my gosh, it's 24/7. I never stop. So
he's up there.
To some degree, you know, I made this, you know, for my dad, and because I knew that he would appreciate the effort and the contribution. And it's a 45-minute pilot. You know, if I had a budget and I had investors, I'd make it into a limited series and make four more 30-minute episodes prior to the election. But, you know, I'm doing this largely on my own money. So, you know, I'm not good at asking other people for money, and I should be, but I'm not. But, you can't make things for free. So
just curious, now, the actors you have in these, are they paid actors, or are they just friends standing in helping you? Who are they?
They are professional. Most of them are professional actors, and they volunteered to do this for free.
Pro bono. All right.
Yeah. So you have to do craft services. You have to pay people and feed people. You have to pay the makeup artist because she's got perishables that, you know, she uses and so forth. And the camera guy, the sound. I mean, these people have equipment. But the actors, I had four of the actors. Three of them came from above Charlotte to Charleston. That's 4.5 hours one way. They're in a car for 9 hours, and they work for free. So they really wanted to do the project. And I don't think it's necessarily – I don't know if they're conservative or not. To be honest, I never asked. I mean, that's – you know, I mean, I think they like the script.
Well, now, here's a thought, because you're in Charleston, and I'm about an hour or so just south of you.
Oh, is that right? Are you in
Savannah? Yes. No, I'm north of Savannah.
Buford, Bluffton?
One of those areas, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
The thing is, I run a tea party down here, and if we have your film down here, we can have a meeting and screen the film with you present.
Oh, sure, yeah.
How does that sound?
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, give Curtis all the contact information to shoot over to me, and we'll arrange it, because here in South Carolina, we have our primary on the 11th.
Okay.
And we have here for Congressional District 1 a forum, which a certain incumbent is not attending, but we're holding it despite that fact, which is going to be this Monday night. So once I get past the forum, then come later on this year, because at this point, we only have a few months left before the election. So, you know, we'll get in touch and do a screening.
That'd be great. Yeah, sure. I would love it. I would love it. Like I said, I think that the distributor has it, and most of my films are on Amazon and Apple TV Plus and Tubi and a host of other streaming services, Vudu.
YouTube?
Well, I have my own YouTube channel, and I will be taking it off of YouTube the minute the distributor gets it on some of the larger platforms. And there's a marketing friend of mine who told me that I should put it on Patreon myself to, you know, raise revenue, and I've never tried that, so I don't know.
I never heard of them.
No, I have heard of them. I haven't used them at all. But I was going to ask a question. Just went right out the window right now. I apologize. Oh, yes. If people want to find out more about you, is there a specific website besides Shadow Boss Entertainment they can go to?
Sure. Well, you know, anybody that wants to look up people in the film and TV business, they go to IMDb, imdb.com. You can put my name in, Adrian Roman, and it'll, you know, show you what films I have, and IMDb may also tell you what streaming services they're on. You can also just Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever it is you use and type in Adrian Roman. Now, there is an Adrian Roman who is a guitar player from South America.
I saw that, yeah.
Now, if you type in Adrian Roman movies, then I'm at the top of the search for that. And like I said, Oak on the Outside was my last feature film. It's an hour and 41 minutes long. And that one has been viewed by pushing 2 million people worldwide, which is interesting. Because, you know, you have this romantic drama, and it's a little bit about PTSD. There's a veteran theme to it, but there's also an anti-child trafficking theme to it.
Component.
And, yeah, if you watch that, I have to tell you, by the end of it, you also know how I feel about that. I'm very direct.
Well, it's a fantastic website that you have, Shadow Moss Entertainment. I was looking at, you have like 20 different films out right now. Am I counting it correctly?
Some of them are in post-production, which means they're in the edit. Some of them are in pre-production, right? So some of them are in development.
So you got your fingers in a lot of pots here.
I do. I'd be dangerous if I ever got any sleep.
Your wife will say, I got 5 minutes of peace and quiet if you fall asleep.
You know, I mean, my poor wife, right? You know. Look, we've been together since 1981, so I guess she's used to me by now.
God bless. Marriages don't last a long time lately, but some of them are starting to survive.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing, you know, about what's happening. It's just weird. Certainly the internet and then social media. And thank God I, you know, am not a young man in this society, because, man, it just seems brutal. And there's so much depression and anxiety and ADHD and
wokeness.
Well, no question, you know, that's a big part of it. But, you know, we're in a swipe world. All of us, including older people, our attention spans, I mean, we have the attention span of a fruit fly. I mean, these younger people who grow up with these devices in their hands. I was at an event with my wife, and we were coming out and walking toward the parking lot, and I saw a kid in a stroller who must have been 5 or 6 years old staring at a cell phone. And I was like, oh, my God. Come on.
Yeah.
And they don't communicate with each other. You could have a family outing in a station wagon. Well, they don't make station wagons anymore. But, you know, and everybody's on their own individual device. Nobody's communicating.
Well, young people use cell phones for everything other than a phone. They don't call each other. They don't talk on the phone. They're texting or whatever else they're doing, largely, I guess.
Streaming.
Texting. Yeah. Well, you know, it's there's some young adults who, you know, are actors that I know, and they're lovely. And they'll call me. I had a young woman who wants to, you know, get into acting, and she's out of college now and relatively local. So, you know, they will call people. They just don't call each other.
Well, I've always said it's become a disposable society. And when you have your attention being held more by your smart device than by your next door neighbor or spouse or child, then we have a problem in society. So how we get people to disconnect, and yet you're broadcasting on the very platform that you want people to disconnect from. So it becomes a catch-22.
Right. Well, that's interesting you should say that. I saw this ad on Facebook talking, and it was like, hey, advertise over here because Facebook ads don't work. And I'm like, you're advertising on Facebook. democracy knows no bounds. no, you know, COVID was the nail in the coffin. You know, I think about London and England, and, you know, going to the local pub and where people would communicate and share ideas and argue with each other and debate things. And that was all shut down. Are there any bowling alleys left where, you know, young teenagers and young adults would just go hang out with each other and eat pizza? You know, the public square is the internet, and look, this is fine and everything with the Zoom or whatever, but it's not the same. You know, human beings, I think we have this thing that comes off of us. I don't know if you want to call it pheromones, but, you know, when we're together, when we're in a room together, when we can shake each other's hands and look each other in the eye, and I don't know, it's just, it's so different than being, you know, on a screen. And I think there are some young people who recognize that, but they're not really necessarily sure how to fix it. You know, are they going to go back to bowling alleys or something like that, right? There's a pond behind my house, and it's really encouraging that every now and then I'll see two or three, you know, boys back there fishing.
Yep.
And they don't have their phone out. They're just, they're yelling across the pond at each other. That's something me and my two brothers used to, you know, just so.
Well, here's a thought now for an upcoming film for you to work on.
Is what?
This very subject, the disconnect. The disconnect. Well, Adrian, we're down to our last couple of minutes here on the show. It has been such a pleasure. And the movie you have is The Third Party, which is excellent. You're going to have it right now on YouTube. And as I said, there is a link to your website. And we welcome you back anytime. And we'll be talking about you coming down for a visit. You and your lovely wife.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much. Adrian and Roman, check them out. The Third Party. And we're down to our last few minutes here, seriously, Curtis. And next week, I was just double checking, we have Jennifer Barbosa, who's running out of Florida's district. I don't remember. I think it was Florida District 15. I could be wrong, 14 or 15. She'll be on the show next week. And the following week, we have Shirley Uhas, who's running for the State House here in South Carolina, as well as Mark Tapscott coming back on the show the following week. So we're getting booked well ahead. This new format seems to be working out, if I can hit the right buttons at the right time.
Yeah, I got
but that's all we got.
I got a few more people that want to come on too.
Okay, great. Well, I thank everyone for joining us. That's all we have for today. And remember, this week is National Police Week. Please walk up to a law enforcement officer near you and thank them for a job well done. With that, I say good night. And God bless.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. Mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. In nasty America. Do you hear our battle cry across America? We've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their eyes. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. For the friends I have loved and lost, and I still believe in God we chose, and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America.
friends we have loved and lost, and we still believe in God we trust. In the freedom our forefathers granted us, we know it's not too late to save America. Save. Oh,